Welcome in to the David L. Gray Show, off code and unscripted on St. Dominic's Media. And we're streaming live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. It's about 6 p.m. here in Germany, but however you're listening, wherever you're listening from, just glad to have you here for an awesome show. Got one thing for you today. I'm going to have my friend Christine Harrington on here. We're talking Mike Avoris. What's going on with him, his new apostolate? She has some interesting insights and news there. Also, I noticed Christine last time her and I were talking privately. It seemed like my friend was like very upset about these people who call themselves Catholic, but seem to be putting their Republican faith, their Republican political beliefs before their faith. And so she, wow, man, she seems to be upset about this, about these people like Frank Pavone and these others who, like, you know, advocating for killing babies. So we're going to be talking about that. So that's today's show. No monologue today. I did my monologue yesterday. So check that out if you didn't see it. We're talking about Jason Whitlock, his anti-Catholic bigotry. Jason Whitlock over at The Blaze. And also this young man named Nick Cavanzos, his Novus Ordo Catholic bigotry. Yesterday was the bigotry show. So check out those monologues. But today is just Christine and I looking forward to getting into. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get this in. Looking forward to your comments below. Like I said, this is live. So if you have any comments, questions, please post them in the comment box. But let's get this going. This is the David L. Gray Show, off code unscripted, St. Dominic's Media. Let's go. Christine Harrington of Eternal Life Plan Podcast, welcome into the show.
Thank you, David, for having me back and having the courage to have me back.
Doesn't take a whole lot with you. You know, I love you. I love when you're here, and we always have a great time speaking. So I'm just blessed to have you back. So thanks for coming in.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. You're my favorite person to talk to, and you're the only Catholic podcast that I watch now. So
yeah, I remember you said that. You cracked me up when you say that. Oh my gosh. You know, last time you and I, we were doing a show about Freemasonry on your podcast. And then after the show was over, you know, we were just chatting like we always do. And I was like, wow, she seems to be kind of upset about you have made, I think, a short or a show about this topic. So I kind of wanted to dig into it with you.
Okay.
So there's an election coming up. Some people may know there's going to be a presidential election sometime, right, in November. And so now is the time where politicians are trying to just figure out a way to win. You know, how can they build up a coalition, get enough votes to get into office? So they're making promises, they're making deals, and they're making compromises, right? And you seem to be very upset about a particular compromise, a particular sellout. Selling out. Mm-hmm. So a particular selling out that they want to do. Tell us about that, Christine.
Well, they're trying to normalize abortion limits. Okay. That's what they're trying to do. So they're pushing, obviously, they're pushing Donald Trump. And because Donald Trump has changed his position on abortion, now the pro-life leaders are changing their position on limits. So this is what's got me really upset, David, is that now that Trump is saying that he criticized Ron DeSantis for installing a six-week ban on abortion. He said that's way too short. It needs to be longer. And now all of a sudden, you know, the dominoes started falling in the pro-life movement, because before, Trump never talked like that, right? Mm. And so Frank Pavone, Kristen Hawkins are the two biggest offenders. Abby Johnson just kind of flip-flops all around the place. You know, one moment she's for Trump, the next moment she's not. Then she's for Trump, then she's for not.
Who's the second person that you mentioned? Is Christine Hawkins. Who is she?
She's director of Students for Life.
She's director of Students for Life. Okay.
Yeah, I called for her resignation.
Wow. Students for Life. Okay. Wow.
Yes. Yes, I called for her resignation. You know, and she, just like Frank Pavone, is talking about the long game in abortion.
Okay.
We got to focus on the long game. Well, meanwhile, babies are being aborted. Even though there's limits, babies are being aborted. Limits doesn't eliminate abortion. It just gives you a stopping point of when you can no longer abort. Meanwhile, they'll fly to California and get an abortion as they're delivering the baby.
Right.
So, you know, this is what's got me upset, is that the message in the pro-life movement has changed to accommodate the political Republican political candidates that are running for president and Senate, like Carrie Lake, who came out and said that Arizona abortion ban was too short, too limited. So you know, but what they're not doing, David, that gets me so upset, they are, Pavone is flipping on abortion. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What Pavone is now promoting is the long game of abortion, and that right now the political candidates, Trump mainly, because on his Instagram account, I'm going to read this, pro-life voices for Trump. I'm sorry. If you're for limits, you are not pro-life. You're pro-choice. There is no other way to cut this. But yeah. Kristen Hawkins, director of Students for Life, Frank Pavone are both supporting candidates that support limits. Yeah. Now,
let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Christine. Is the most important thing just to get these people elected, and then once they're in, they can be more pro-life? Is it okay just to go ahead and sell out just to get elected? Because the argument coming from these people like Donald Trump, and he's not a Catholic, right? So, you know,
right.
But he does know the truth. So, but his argument is that people like Ron DeSantis are too extreme and they're unelectable. So he thinks there's some sort of middle ground that makes this exception idea makes these people electable. That's Carrie Lake's idea, and makes her electable. What do you say?
Well, that's bull. You know, what they're saying is they're trading babies for votes. That's what they're doing. They're trading babies for votes. So apparently Trump and Carrie Lake think they can't win unless they support abortion, because there's somebody out there that says the majority of Americans support abortion up to a certain limit. Well, where does that information come from? Where's it come from?
Liberals, probably. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, come on. The majority of Americans don't support abortion, you know, and there's this misconception, David, as you can see, I'm already getting heated.
Yeah. Yeah. See, this is, I want to throw some water on you. Cool down. No, that's fine.
I'm so tired of the spin. That's what it is. I'm so tired of the spin. And then when the pro-life movement came in and they started twisting themselves in a pretzel, trying to figure out how they can support Trump's new abortion stance, that's when I went, what is wrong with these people? What is wrong with them?
Yeah.
Now,
your point is that they want to kill babies for votes.
Yeah.
This exchange, babies for votes. And you say you definitely disagree with that, because it's just the principle of the matter, and that there's really no evidence out there that there's a majority of that is a. But Christine, why is it though that it's always Republicans that have to compromise, that have to somehow make these deals. Democrats, they don't operate like that. They don't worry about, they'll craft the narrative, they'll send out the message, and they'll stick to their message. They don't compromise, right? So why is it that Republicans always feel like they have to compromise to get elected?
It's not just the Republicans that compromise. It's conservatives compromise as well. You know, there's a difference between Republicans and conservatives. That's you know, true. Would you agree with that?
I do. But nowadays, I think they're both controlled opposition. I think we see that in the House. Hakeem Jeffries even said the Democrats do anything they want in the House, even though the minority. So I think a brilliant plan, if you wanted to stay in power as a liberal, as a Democrat, if you wanted to stay in power, you would just create or take over something and pretend that it's just controlled opposition and give people this fake choice. Clearly it's a uniparty, but the uniparty doesn't lean right. The uniparty leans left. That's where I was. So yes, I agree that there are Republicans, there's conservatives, but I just think they're controlled opposition at this point. I don't know.
I agree. And I have little to no faith in our political system anyhow, or our government. And that's another discussion. But what the Republican, I'll say this, what the pro-life movement is now trying to do is normalize abortion, that or normalize limits. That's what they're trying to do in order to get Trump elected. It's like throw out any religion, any ethics, any morals, just get Trump elected.
And that's what JM is saying here, Christine. He's pointing to this idea that we as Catholics, we do not believe that the ends justify the means. We believe the moral act itself, abortion, is murder.
Yes.
And so there's no ends justify the means. Oh, let's kill some babies now so that we can get elected. But JM is saying, I need to understand this issue. Conception is not on the ballot. I will push back there. I think it's always on the ballot. Planned Parenthood says it's always on the ballot. But could these choices for abortion limits be a means to an ends until conception becomes a bill to introduce or put on a ballot? So I guess JM saying, hey, let's get all these Republicans or conservatives elected so that now they're in a majority and then they'll push a bill. Christine, I don't believe that, because every time these Republicans and conservatives, they've been in control, they've never done anything but raise money for this issue.
I want to say a shout out to JM because she's a big follower on my channel. Thank you, JM, for your comment and question. But I'm with you. I have no faith at all that once Republicans get control, that they're going to change a thing. None at all. I mean, look at what didn't get done in Trump's administration when he was president. And of course, that's what Frank Provone always goes back to, is look at what Trump did for the pro-life movement when he was president.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, he got the Supreme Court judges elected. Yes, check that box. Yes, he did that. He defunded Planned Parenthood with federal money. Yep, check that box. He did that. But there is no guarantee that once he becomes president, that he's going to roll back his now new abortion stance. I will not call it a pro-life stance. It is not a pro-life position. It's pro-choice. And if you're for limits, you're pro-choice.
Yeah.
Frank Pavone, Kristen Hawkins, Abby Johnson.
Yeah. And where would you say, you said Abby Johnson, you said she's, well, we know where Frank Pavone is at. He's Trump first, Catholic faith second, right? Christine Hawkins seems to be the same place. You know,
Trump same first. Talking points.
Yeah. But Abby Johnson, you said she's kind of flipped back and forth on this issue. Could you kind of highlight her timeline on this for us?
Well, about, I want to say a few years back, when Trump was, you know, announcing he was going to reelect, you know, she was behind him 100%. And I was skeptical about Trump coming back. I was skeptical. I voted for him, but I was skeptical that he would really be a true pro-life president. Now, I was the first to say during his term that he was the most pro-life president we had. He attended March for Life. He did lots of good things, but his true colors showed when he came out and said Ron DeSantis went too far on the 6-week abortion ban. That's when his true colors showed up. And Abby Johnson never said a word. Many times she never challenged it at all. I was pretty vocal about it on social media to all three of them, Abby and Frank Pavone and Kristen Hawkins. And then Abby started backpedaling, but what Abby would not do is use Trump's name. She would talk about, this dangerous path we're going down in the political sphere, but she would never use Trump's name.
Okay. Why? And I know you can only speculate here, but why? What would be the benefit of doing that?
Well, everyone, it's like all these Catholics. Well, let me say, it's because they want Trump's favor. All these Catholics went down to Mar-a-Lago this year to have their fundraiser and prayer breakfast. I was so upset about that as well, David. So we had Jim Caviezel, General Flynn, Father Altman, Tim Ballard was there.
Yeah.
I know why you're laughing about that. Tim Ballard was there. One of our local, who I won't even mention her name because she's a phony too, she was down there kissing up as well. And I'll just say it, Vicky Yamasaki with Corpus Christi for Unity and Peace. I know all about that organization because I was on it at one time. Wow. And she was down there kissing up too. So,
Christine, you are so off code and unscripted right now. You're so off code and unscripted. Like you're not even pulling any punches.
I just lost respect for these people. How can you go down there and do this knowing he changed his abortion position?
But Trump feels like he probably can change his abortion position because, Christine, here's what the options are. There's Joe Biden, who is in Florida, and the lady's talking about how, abortion is on the ballot now in Florida, right? And this is what they do. Anytime they want to make abortion illegal in any of these states, they put abortion on the ballot, they put weed on the ballot. So they get the weed heads and you get the murderers out there. And it passes. It can pass in Alabama. Abortion can be put in every constitution. Every constitution can be amended as long as you got abortion and weed on the ballot, right? So he's down there and he does a sign of the cross when this lady is talking about this. So you have a heretic,
yes,
apostate, son of Satan up there doing a sign of the cross when the lady mentions abortion. You have Kamala Harris, the vice president, who is the first vice president to openly campaign at a Planned Parenthood kill site. She's there campaigning at an abortion meal. So why, Christine, why wouldn't Trump feel as though he could, because these people are, first of all, abortion is always extreme. Murder is always extreme. But why wouldn't Trump feel like, man, if I say 6 weeks, 10 weeks, it's not these people who say you kill a baby on before the day is born.
Yeah. And for your audience that may not know, abortion is a trigger point for me because I've had two abortions in the past and I bought into the whole BS of a clump of cells, right? So it was when I had my son and carrying my son full term and had him and then having a near-death experience as a result of a botched up C-section, I really understood what it was that I did in the abortions and how wrong it was. So I am not talking as a pro-life person who has no experience with this. I'm talking from a woman who deeply regrets my abortion, okay, and how wrong it is, and that, in my opinion, there is no greater heinous crime than abortion. This is an innocent living baby in a woman's womb that we're supposed to protect and love. What did I do? It has haunted me the rest of my life, and it will haunt me the rest of my life. I cannot tell your audience how profoundly abortion changes a woman. Now, they may be loud and proud and saying that, oh, you know, they've had 20 abortions. I've been at rallies where women have said this. The reason why they're saying that is because they're the most hurt, and they're trying to convince themselves that what they did is good and right. They cannot be wrong about this. So that's why they defend it so vehemently. And Trump, just like Biden and Harris, who probably have never experienced abortion, and people that have never experienced abortion, think, well, what does it matter? You know, it's just about this big, if that, that you aborted. Mothers know instinctively killing their child is wrong. And when we begin to normalize abortion, which it has, Planned Parenthood, the pro-life choice or the pro-choice movement has done a really good job normalizing abortion. Now we're going to normalize limits. And mark my words, if we begin to normalize limits, then abortion will now be a free reign choice that you can do anywhere, at any time, whatever you want to do. If we begin to normalize limits, and that's my biggest fear.
Yeah. So you don't feel like limits are a form of people stopping a sin by moderation? Like if you're doing a sin, I don't believe it either, but let me just give you an example. A person who's just out here fornicating, and say, well, I'm not going to completely stop fornicating. I'm just going to try to do it with fewer people. And by moderation, hopefully I get down to, you know, one person. Hopefully I can eventually stop. So by putting in term limits, is that stopping the sin by moderation? Can we put some hope in that? Like, well, we're at 16 weeks now. Maybe we could get down to 3 weeks pretty soon.
No. I mean, the morning after pill is a sin, right?
Yeah.
That's abortion. And what we don't know with all these pills now that you can take to stop an abortion or to purge a baby from the womb, we don't know exactly how many abortions are being performed every day. The ones that don't make it to the clinic that are doing it at home with a pill. And, you know, that's now become mainstream as well, that you can get the pills at your local pharmacy. Step right up.
Yeah. Are you kind of, how do you feel that Frank Provone isn't that he's been, he's not he's been laid aside. He can't call himself a priest anymore. Does that make the whole thing better now? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Better about him being laicized?
Yeah, now he's not a priest out here advocating He's not anti. He's not a pro-abortion priest now, right?
Well, tell him that, because that's not what his social media says.
Oh, he still calls himself a priest on the social media?
Well, he says now it's full-time pro-life leader, ordained in 1988, director. Priest for Life, national co-chair, pro-life voices for Trump. This is on his Instagram account.
Okay. So there's he's still putting out that perception that he's a priest. Okay.
Yeah. I've written Frank Pavone many times. And of course, the administrative assistant always responds. And I get this, six-page paragraph of the long view. You got to keep in consideration the long view. Well, meanwhile, how many babies are you going to let die because of your long view? Do you think the pro-life or the pro-choice movement is looking at their long view? No, they're looking at killing more babies.
And the long view, I mean, it's illogical because it's not guaranteed. We don't have some sort of crystal ball that says, oh, if we just elect this number of Republicans, then in the future, this or this and this is going to happen, right? It's a crack pipe. It's a crack dream. It's using people, it's leveraging people to get them to do what you want to do. It's the same game they played every time that they've gotten in power. Oh, if you just send us some more money, if you just send us back into D.C., send us back to the House, we can do this and that. Andrew Stahl said this, Christine. He said, Ron Paul said many years ago, Republicans don't want to stop abortion. If they did, conception would be defined.
Yeah, your thoughts on that? He's right. Ron Paul did say that. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, what does that mean, though, that conception would be defined? Is that the same thing you're talking about codifying limits?
Yes, exactly. And plus, have our political leaders defined conception?
No.
They haven't. And, we have three political candidates for president: Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Donald Trump, and Joe Biden.
Right.
All three are pro-choice. We have no pro-life presidential candidate to vote for. None.
Yeah. That's so nothing has really nothing. I am disappointed. I thought, when I voted for Trump in 2016, really 2016, in 2020, but in 2016, I really believed that, he was the pro-life candidate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but I always was concerned, Christine, about his plan to overturn Roe Wade. Because one, I thought it took our eyes off the ball about the thing that you said about they were already transitioning to this abortion pill, right? So that's a whole different fight that we were taking our eyes off of. And then the other thing was that I just knew that if abortion went back to the states, if child murder, child sacrifice went back to the states, that I thought Planned Parenthood had enough money, they had enough emotion, they had enough celebrities, they had enough machinations, the evil things that they do, like putting weed on the ballot with abortion, that they could, like I said, they could get child sacrifice legalized in every state. What do you think is the trajectory? Because you see what they're doing in every state. You see, they're trying to amend the Constitution in every state. The state right next to you, Ohio, where I'm from, did it, right? What do you think the trajectory is? Are they going to do this in every state?
Yeah, I think so. And like I said earlier, that, if we normalize limits, then those limits will keep getting pushed further and further away until, you might start at 6 weeks. Then you end up coming back and voting for 12-week limits and then 18-week limits and then no limits. that's what I fear is going to happen. And
that is that the limits are going to go up, not down.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the only, my fear with Roe versus Wade being overturned, you know, I said this, that doesn't mean abortion stops. You know, yeah. It'll be kicked back to the states, and each state will have their own legislation on it. And then once it was kicked back to the states, what happened? Corporations, the woke corporations stepped up and said, oh, you're pregnant. You're one of my employees. I'll not only pay for your abortion, I'll fly you to California. I'll pay for your hotel expenses. Yeah. I'll fly you back. You know, they gave them incentives to get abortions. What does the pro-life movement do? Nothing.
Yeah. Christine, what do you think we should do with these Catholics? Some of the, you know, you dropped a lot of names. You went completely off code. But what do you think we should do with these people who we've given them a lot of money, we've given them platforms, Frank Perfone, Christine Hawkins, Abby Johnson. What do you think we should do with people who are trying to tell us that it's elections first and keep your Catholic faith out that ballot box? What do you think we should do with them?
You're Catholic first. God comes first. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. I can't tell people how to vote.
Yeah.
Nor will I.
Yeah.
I know what I'm going to do. But David, I can't tell people how to vote.
Yeah.
What I but will. What,
the people themselves, though, like Pavone and, you know, these people, I mean, do we try to change their mind? I mean, what do we do with them? Because they're the ones that are Catholic.
I think we need a whole new pro-life movement. That's what I think. I think we need new pro-life leaders. The current ones that we have, other than Lila Rose. Lila Rose is the only one that's been consistent about no abortion, period. No pills, no limits, no nothing. She's the only one that's been consistent. But other than praying for Frank Pavone, other than praying and writing letters and vocalizing how you feel, I don't know what else there is to do other than rise up new pro-life leaders who are the ones that are pure pro-life, no compromise. Yeah. You know, and this is the other interesting point too, David. You know, years ago, pro-life leaders would say abortion has no room to be in politics. Now they make it all about politics.
Yeah. I think one of the tragedies of our system in the United States is that life is a political issue. It's not a moral issue.
Yeah.
Right? And I think in both parties leverage it, you know, even the Republicans, when it comes to the death penalty, that's not a more, that's a political issue. Republican Democrats. And for both parties, you know, it used to be Republicans. It was war, you know, now the Democrats, they want more wars than the Republicans. It's just life and the way we treat life are political issues. You even look at more social issues when it comes to what do we do with immigration? What do we do with homelessness? What do we do with people who are addicted to drugs? All these, I think, are moral issues, and we politicize them. And what happens is that no one's better off from it. And people, all only thing that ends up happening is that more people die, right?
Well, sure, David. And you just named off quite a few life issues.
Yeah.
Right? Abortion, illegal immigration.
Yeah.
Drugs, the fracture of the family.
Yeah.
You know, this has all been coming down over the last 60, 70 years to get to the point where we're at right now, where life doesn't mean a thing to anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to transition shortly to another topic. I want to get to a few more questions, Christine. This is Christians praying. They say Trump knows he doesn't need Christians or Catholics votes. Yeah, right. Votes are not counting. He knows he only needs APAC.
No comment on that.
And then Laura says abolitionist groups are also not compromising. People are cowards and won't listen to the truth. Abortion is a human rights violation. It kills humans.
Yep.
Yeah, flat out. Yeah.
You know, one of the most powerful things I do, David, when I do my pro-life talk is I set up, before the speech, I set up five chairs in front of where I'm speaking. And then at the end, I go, I want you to meet my family. And then if my son is there, he'll sit in one chair, I'll sit in the other chair. And then you see the three empty chairs, which were the children I aborted. And it just grasps people when they visually see, this is my family. And it's visibly obvious, the three that are not there. And now that I am 69 years old and aging and, you know, still fighting these horrible feelings that I have about what I did, the reality is every Christmas, every Thanksgiving, every birthday, every holiday, there should be four children around me instead of one. There should be grandchildren that they probably would all have by now instead of having one grandchild now. And I think about this every holiday. You know, when my son and his wife and grandchild come over, and you know, this could have been a full house.
Yeah. I remember we were talking about another time, because we were talking about how you had told your son about this, and he was, you know, at first, you know, he has some emotions surrounding this because he was the only child for a while, and he was thinking, man, I gotta have siblings this whole time. But now this is graduated into now we're talking about grandchildren. So
yes,
this is how abortion, because you're always the parents, right? You're always of a dead child, but now you're thinking about grandchildren. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah Sad, really.
Yeah. Christine, there's something else that, you know, you spent probably, I would say, the last 6-7 months talking about this topic on Eternal Life podcast, Eternal Life Plan podcast. You have been researching and speaking with people and just really digging into what happened at Church Militant? What happened with Michael Voris? Why did it happen? Who could have prevented it? Why didn't they prevent it? All the machinations they have been involved in, the people who have been harmed by just malfeasance, by fraud, by abuse, both financial, both and emotional. You've just been covering the whole gamut of every different angle, and you've really been focusing on just the human issue. Like, people were harmed by another person's behavior, and there hasn't been any show of contrition or repentance or anything yet. And in fact, you have been speaking about lately on Eternal Life Plan that Mr. Michael Voris, rather than doing what he can to make amends for the people he harmed over at Church Militant, you're saying that, you know, he's kind of like dusted, you know, his shoulders off, dusted his pants off, and just starting something new. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you, David. When I started talking about the situation at Church Militant and Michael Voris, it wasn't something I really wanted to do, but I saw a lot of other Catholic podcasters out there giving information that just really wasn't true at all. And since I worked at Church Militant for 6 months, I saw a lot, heard a lot early on. And was I surprised that any of this happened? No, I wasn't. I left after 6 months for a reason, and it wasn't because I wasn't cutting the mustard, but I saw too much of what was going on, and I did not choose to stay and work for a business like that. So, you know, one of the things that upset me the most through all of this is I have been through, oh gosh, nine, in my corporate career, in my corporate insurance career, I'd been downsized 9 times in 17 years. So I saw how a business handles downsizing an entire company. Now, even though severance wasn't required in my state, the companies I worked for always gave us severance because that was the ethical thing to do. And plus, they didn't want to be the employer that didn't severance their employees. They wanted to try to do what was right for the employee. Well, Voris didn't do that. You know, the first round of layoffs in March, end of March 2023, I got to think the timeline. Yeah, March 2023, which was about a year after I left. All of those people were let go in one day. And were told they weren't getting severance and they could collect unemployment instead.
Okay.
You know, which you can collect unemployment if you get severance, but it was like.
So it's not an either or type of thing, you're saying?
No.
Okay. And we're talking about unemployment is these aren't the COVID days. They're not doubling up unemployment. Unemployment is not a lot of money.
No, it's not. It's about half of what you make, if that. And it's only like over, I think, a 6-week period. Depends on the state. Everyone has their own unemployment laws as well. But, you know, that was 19 people that were let go from a business that they all left their families and moved to Detroit to work for Michael Voris. Many of them didn't even have travel expenses paid. Their moving expenses were not paid. So think about that. They used their own money to move to work at Church Militant. And then now they're let go. And the conditions, the pay was so poor there, David, sorry about that. The pay was so poor there that there were many times 4 young men would have to rent one house in order to be able to have the money to live. So now they're laid off. How are they going to get back home? And this is supposed to be a Catholic apostolate, you know? Yeah. That was a total, and Christine Chrislieb and I did a broadcast about that. Of course, everyone inside a Church Militant said we were just disgruntled employees. Well, Michael was all about calling out bishops, calling out priests. Well, I decided I was going to call out Michael Voris because what he did was ethically wrong, and it certainly wasn't Catholic. Father Imbarato did his own video recently about.
So you had covered that. Yeah.
This whole situation, which I was glad that finally someone else came out and recognized the same thing that I did, And that is, you know, he has a responsibility as a Catholic to his employees. Yeah, it's shameful when there isn't an effort to pay people at just wage. Absolutely, Lisa. And the other thing about it, too, is he was pressuring Mike Sherry, who was the default St. Michael Media president. And I say that default because they asked many people to come on the board and nobody wanted to. And the one guy that they did finally bring on, YG Nightstorm, he only lasted a few weeks before they got rid of him.
Interesting. What is the, I know you're heading up to the whole thing. You know, Michael started a whole new apostle, but like, can we pause for a second? What's the whole YG Nightstorm thing about? I'm looking at these videos. They're pushing some sort of cruise. Did a cruise ever happen? And this whole YG Nightstorm, where did he come from? Why was he there? What was this? It was just like a little weird sort of few weeks there, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So even though the apostolate is in dire straits financially, they continue to have the retreat at sea in February of 2024. The day YG Nightstorm, which they, you know, marketed him as one of the speakers on the retreat, all of a sudden is fired. The day he was supposed to step forward.
Yeah. And I had never even heard of the guy. Then he's there, then he's not. That whole thing was really weird.
Yeah. Just one more nail in the coffin of a bad decision by St. Michael Media Church Militant. One of many. And I'm sure YG's a nice man, probably had no idea what he was getting into. And they were desperate to find people because nobody wanted to be on that board. Nobody wanted that liability.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so, what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought there, David. So what I was trying to point out, and Christine Chrisleep has come on my show many times because she is a nonprofit expert. That was her expertise and her career over the years was fundraising for nonprofits. So she knew all about that. But what we noticed with the new church militant, God and Country, Souls and Liberty, or whatever it is, they're doing the very same thing that they did at the old church militant, St. Michael Media. Same people. So Michael has surrounded himself with all his yes people again, and people that will never push back on him. And so nothing's changed. It's just rewrapped. He just kind of, you know, I have said this before in my podcast. I think it was premeditated. I can't prove it, but I think it was. He just kind of, you know, dusted himself off, as you said, and moved down to Texas and started a whole nother scheme.
Yeah. And I'm about to pull up the site for you here, and maybe you can just kind of walk through this for us and just kind of tell us where we're looking at here. So let me pull it up here.
Their newsletter is so amateur, it's embarrassing. So we'll start with that. And you know, every 5 minutes they're asking for donations. So this Arthur Claroy, I don't know how to say his name. He is someone I don't know. We suspect he is connected with Jules Gomez out of Rome. Okay. Jim Ellis was a political consultant that they used at Church Militant when I was there.
Yeah, I remember his name.
Yeah, Dr. Jules Gomez is the Rome correspondent who can't speak Italian. So figure that one out.
I have a hard time. I know, right? I have a hard time listening. I think he's smart. You know, he has the degrees, but man, I struggle really understanding him sometimes.
He also, go back up. So he also has some controversy and scandal surrounding him as well. And then Barbara Toth is a very sweet, intelligent woman. I have no idea why she agreed to go over to work for him. She shared with me her frustrations when I worked there with her. And she went under a pseudonym. And that is, I can never remember what her pseudonym is. I'm sorry, but she never published under her real name at Church Militant. So I don't know why she's doing that here. And then go down. Then we've got Gary Michael Vorse. Isn't that a switch? We never called him Gary Michael Vorse.
Did anybody know that he was Gary Michael Vorse?
I didn't.
Is that his father's name or anything like that? What is that?
Apparently, that's his full name, is Gary Michael Vorse.
So if we would go to Detroit and go to just the clerk of courts and maybe look up speeding tickets or something like that, he would be listed there as, that's his legal name, Gary Michael Vorse.
Well, it is, because this is how I know. When I stayed at, once a month, I went up to Detroit to work for a week. And I was supposed to move to Detroit July of 2023. Thank God. I'm sorry, July of 2022. I was supposed to move to Detroit. Thank God I didn't, because I would have been one of the people laid off in March of 2023, because he laid off all the people that was on evening news, because who knows? I mean, Hunter Bradford resigned the week before, and then he was in such a state about Hunter Bradford resigning that all of a sudden evening news is gone, no more. We're going to get rid of all these people. So
what were their expectations for the evening news? Because I was in a studio the day it launched, and it seemed like, you know, and I went to dinner with Michael that night, and it seemed like this is thing. They're trying to become a CNN, a Fox News. This is the thing, right? What were their expectations? Did they want a million views? Why did they consider it a failure?
Well, it was a failure.
By what standard, though?
Michael thought we would be the Catholic Fox News organization. That's what he thought. And that's what he fundraised on. And that's where he went to his donors over and over again, trying to get more donations. Now, I had someone who I won't reveal who it is write me a lengthy email about all the money she gave for the equipment for evening news, and how sickening it was for her when they just closed shop.
Oh, the equipment they needed for evening news was donated by individual?
Yep. She spent lots of money. Well, her words, significant amount of money.
Wow.
Yep.
So this is a true believer.
Yes.
In what they were doing. Okay.
Yeah. And she was, apparently she tried to reach out to find out what was going on. Oh, no, they don't have time to, you know, bother with the donors.
Yeah. And this was something for me. Lou G says, I wasn't even a regular viewer, but the minute they hired a table full of young people, mostly male, was a huge, that was a little bit, it's kind of like I'm looking at it, Christine, and I see, okay, maybe they're trying to get a younger audience, maybe. But it struck me as not being credible news.
Well, what it was, what it really was, David, is they hired a bunch of inexperienced people, me being one of them. Okay, so I was one of the script writers for evening news. I got about a day training, and then that was it. and I'm supposed to be this expert on script writing for evening news. Yeah. And the idea of having the young faces was not only to attract a younger audience, but they were going to be the succession plan for Church Militant.
Okay.
Hunter That's- Bradford was, you know, the golden-haired boy, and who Michael Voris was obviously, I saw it the first week I was there, obviously in love with Hunter.
I'm gonna leave that one there. That's so, there's so many places to go with that. But Stephen Wynn, BA, MBA. I don't know who checks these degrees. Everyone has these like degrees after their names.
Yeah.
But do we know anything about him?
Oh yeah, I know all about Stephen Wynn.
Okay.
So the order of management for me was Brad Eli and then Stephen Wynn. So Stephen Wynn was the overseer of evening news. And so he had to coordinate all the stories. He had to coordinate all the scripts. He had to coordinate the graphics. He was, you know, the upper echelons. But Stephen is nothing but a yes man. Whatever Voris wants, he would never challenge Voris, never. It was whatever Voris wanted. Okay. And which leads us into the Dallaire lawsuit, which Father Dallaire in New Hampshire has sued Voris back in 2019 for defamation.
Yeah.
And Voris is claiming that, you know, he didn't have any high level oversee of anything. And that's not true. That man saw every freaking script ever written for evening news. And if a story was linked to him in any way by his sources, he made sure that he saw that story. So he's trying to, you know, pull the wool over his eyes with this Dallaire lawsuit. And someone said, can't we pray for Mike? Yes, we should be praying for Michael Voris, because Michael Voris is the same Michael Voris that he was last year. Nothing has changed at all.
Christine, before we started the segment, before I went to the website, you said they're doing the same thing. This is the new Church Militant. Now, they don't go by it, you know, the new Church Militant or Church Militant at all. You know, it's Souls and Liberty. But then I scrolled up and I saw some other links, and I think I see what you mean now. They're doing everything that they were. It's a retreat at sea.
Yeah. 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 Everything's the same. It's just a new name.
Wow. This is like if Milli Vanilli came back and under like a whole new name, but they're still lip syncing. It's literally this, and the presenters are Jim Ellis, Jewel Gomes, Gary Michael Voris. It's the same thing. A cruise in November.
Go to Who We Are and go to Mission. And just keep scrolling down. And I don't know if it's on this one or the next one, but they had, okay, they don't have it there anymore. Go back up to Who We Are and then Strategy. I'll be darned. They took it out. So Who We Are, they listed their board members.
They've taken
it out. And that's Mary McCann, who was our receptionist at the old Church Militant, Debbie Terverdick, who did some of the fundraising, and then Mark Rivard, who was an outsider, a very good friend of Michael's, who didn't do any work at Church Militant. But when you have board members, you're supposed to have non-employee board members.
Right.
Not people that you're that, you know, their paycheck is tied to their decisions as a board.
Christine, when Church Militant was shutting down, you know, they did a lot of auctioning off of the stuff and, you know, the building over there in Detroit. Does somebody take home all the statues? Because these are the same things that were on the other website. They're selling like the same. They're selling the same stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if they shipped them down there to him or not, or who's handling it in Detroit. I really don't. But yeah, it's a lot of the same stuff that they had in their shop. And, you know, if you remember, or maybe you don't, but some of the viewers may remember, I think it was back in November, they announced that they were having a sale for the shop and getting rid of all the merchandise on the shop. And even then, they weren't even transparent with the viewers and with the supporters, telling them. They never really said why they were closing down the shop. Well, that's just one more indication they're going out of business.
Yeah.
You know, it was going out of business sale.
I just can't believe the prices of these statues. I mean, there's, I live in Europe here, and there's a lot of all these holy sites, Fatima Lourdes, you know, I go to. And I always think the gift shops are overpriced. I hardly ever, never, I almost never buy anything. Well, you got to be kidding me. These prices? Stop.
Yeah. Go to Catholic.com. Catholic, and I think it's CatholicCompany.com, and look at their prices to compare it. Seriously, do it. Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
that's
my
where
goodness.
That's where I buy my stuff. If I can't get it locally, we've got a really good Catholic bookstore here in Indy called Celtic. Bookstore, but if I can't get it there, I go to CatholicCompany.com and get it through them. And I'm pretty sure I paid less on my bronze statues than what they're selling here.
let me I'm over there now. I'm about to pull up some prices.
See if you can find some, David.
Yeah. Let me do a St. Michael statue.
All right. And, you know, the other thing of it is, just look at the confusion. Is it God and country, or is it souls and liberty? And it was just like at the old Church Militant. We never called ourselves St. Michael's Media. Yeah. We were always Church Militant. We didn't even know that the two companies had a completely different nonprofit designation. St. Michael's Media was a 501c3 and Church Militant was a 501c4.
Wow. I mean, so I see they're asking for money, they're asking for donors and everything like that.
And I get like 5 emails from them a day.
How do you think they're doing? Are they raising money? Or are they finding? They say it's a sucker born every day.
I don't know, David, to be honest with you.
This is an operation, they have to keep it focused. I remember they started off as some sort of free website. Now they actually have an actual domain.
Yeah.
Which, you know, not a whole lot of money. The site itself is, you know, it's pretty basic, pretty, you know, bare bones. It's not a whole lot there. But
they've got people on the payroll,
right?
So there has to be some income coming in to pay these people. I can tell you, Jim Ellis isn't working for free.
Yeah. And Nils Gomez, he's definitely want to get paid. You have essays here.
Yeah.
So, I guess the Retreat at Sea, I mean, that could be, I think, maybe a major fundraiser. Those retreats, whether they're trips or retreats or pilgrimages, there's a large margin in those. The person who's organizing makes a lot of money.
Yeah, that's Carmen Allred, and she was an employee at Church Militant, and she also had her own travel agency. Win-win for Carmen.
Yeah. I mean, if you have the travel agency, and you also have the I mean, that's really a good relationship, really.
Yeah. For both, and for she everything went on Michael's American Express card, his personal American Express card. And I started to tell this story when I would travel once a month to Detroit and stay for a week. That's how I knew Michael's name, because they said, your reservation is in the name of Gary Michael Voris. And I said, oh, it's not in my name. And then I realized, well, he's racking up the points at the Hampton Inn.
Oh, so it wasn't a company card. Because you could do the same thing with a company card. You could get the points or whatever. I mean, you can get some free stays, but it wasn't the company. It was the personal. Wow.
Yes, and everybody used his personal American Express card. Who does that in a legitimate business? Nobody.
I love when you ask the question and answer it. So a lot of people have moved on, started some new apostolates. Kyle Copey is here. You know, he's here.
Mm-hmm. Clean Diamonds Media. I was glad to see that.
And he's starting his own podcast here. It's going to be called Even Keel. So, you know, we're happy to partner with Kyle. And Christine now, she has her own thing. I guess this show she has is something she was doing before she joined Church Militant. Now she's kind of went back to her roots there.
Yes.
But some people, when it comes to these lawsuits that you're talking about, some people still aren't in the clear. Who still isn't in the clear with their past life with Church Militant?
What do you mean by that?
The lingering lawsuits, lingering issues that's going on in Church Militant. Who's still feeling, like you said, Michael Voris, I think, or somebody still being sued. Who still isn't in the clear?
So the only lingering lawsuit that I know about is the Dallaire lawsuit.
Yeah.
Now, Patmos Hosting, who hosted and provided servers for churchmilitant.com, they sued Joe Gallagher and Jeff Santo, because they claimed that they were the new managers for St. Michael Media Church Militant. And then Joe Gallagher put out that video on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then took it down within 24 hours because he was pitching donations from Church Militant people to donate to his at-profit business, Truth Army. Yeah. And that's unethical.
Oh, but Truth Army was looking to somehow leverage or take over Church Militant and kind of be the new Church Militant, right?
That was the plan. And of course, Joe Gallagher said that he was only interested in saving jobs. Well, if that was true, why are you on Church Militant's YouTube channel pitching money for your Truth Army? You know, another business doesn't go on another business and ask for money, right?
Yeah. Who's getting the money for the YouTube? The YouTube channel is still up. It's still getting revenue. There's still ads up. Where's that money going?
Well, I don't think the channel didn't used to be monetized. Michael never wanted to monetize it because he couldn't control what advertising was going to be on there. So it was never monetized. But it is still up. And then after that whole Joe Gallagher fiasco, so Patmos Hosting lawsuit is still alive and well, suing Joe Gallagher and Jeff Santos. And then the Dallaire lawsuit is the only one left. And the only defendant that's left is Gary Michael Voris, because Voris wouldn't accept their settlement. They wanted him to admit responsibility for these articles. And instead, he threw Christine Niles under the bus for the entire thing, which really upset me because, you know, I know working there that him saying that he didn't pay attention to, he didn't review any of those articles, you know, he didn't sign off on that. Oh, he signed off on these little script writings that we were all doing. So that's gear. So Voris is the only one left in the Dallaire lawsuit.
Okay, so Christine now she's out. She doesn't.
She was never a defendant.
Okay. Okay. She Michael just throwing her under the bus.
Yes. Yes. He's okay. Blaming her. And of course, he's never wrong about anything. And I sat in on one of those hearings that they allowed public to sit in on. And, you know, Voris was trying to tell the judge what to do. And the judge shut that down real fast and kind of told him to shut up and sit in the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you think they, and I know you talked about this before, there was a lot of waste, a lot of abuse there. I think their website hosting, who's managing their members and their video database, they're paying them like, oh my gosh, they're paying them so much money. That contract was just out of this world. That was just mismanagement. It was a type of mismanagement that made me think that somebody's getting some money on the back end. It's kind of like when I used to be a finance manager at a car dealership, and my clients didn't know that I'm pushing some loans to them, which I thought were good interest rates, but they didn't know that the credit union is giving me a percentage of that, right? You know, so it's a win-win. And everyone know, if you go to a car dealership, avoid the finance manager. But this is what's going on. It was so lucrative. It's like somebody getting something on that back end over there. But I'm thinking, for them to not have enough money to continue on, there had to be a lot of debts, but also there had to be some other area where they spent a lot of their money. And I'm thinking, was it that lawsuit with Boston, where over the whole thing? Was that, what are some areas where you think they just wasted a lot of donors' money?
Well, the Enough is Enough conference was when the bishops, well, I shouldn't say the bishops, allegedly, the city of Baltimore tried to shut down their venue for the Enough is Enough conference. And of course, they would always have their conference right next door to where the bishops were meeting annually in Baltimore. But here again, if you had a competent board and not just surround yourself with a bunch of yes people, the board would have said, no, we're not going to pursue this lawsuit. We're not going to pursue this. That is not whatever happened. Whatever Voris wanted to do, no one even challenged him on it. And think about this, David, a nonprofit business that was bringing in $5 to $6 million a year, which is what Church Militant was bringing in from donations and subscribers. They never had a board meeting. Never had a board meeting. Board meetings were never called.
$1 million
a year.
A year. Now, again, I don't know what, you know, their liabilities are, but that's quite a bit of money.
That's right. It is. It is. And it shows on their 990s and what they were bringing in. And the board never, there was never, so if he wanted, just to give you an example, if he wanted to pursue the Baltimore lawsuit, there would have had to been a board meeting. He would have, you know, pitched his case, and then they would have voted whether they wanted to move forward or not, whether they had the money to move forward or not. But that never happened.
Wow. Wow. It's just like one of those cases that, you know, you're maybe getting your MBA or something like that. And they throw these case studies at you, both good examples and bad examples. This whole thing should be just wrapped up in, I think, a case study of how not to run a nonprofit.
Absolutely. Christine Chrislieb and I have said this over and over again, that, you know, one of the main reasons that we wanted to move forward doing these shows is to show people this is not how a nonprofit should be ran. You should do your due diligence before you send your money to a nonprofit, and how they were completely destroying the lives of their employees through their mismanagement and through their spending.
That's amazing. Man, I've taken up a lot of your time, and I appreciate your generosity, my friend. I know you're a super busy person, and you're phenomenal in every way. So thanks for coming on and talking, speaking with us about these fake Catholics who are putting politics before their faith and just want us to go into the ballot and close our eyes and just ignore our faith and just vote for expediency and this crack pipe that something may happen. And also thanks for sharing with us some pieces of just highlights of some of the things you've been covering these past 7 months or so. Really appreciate you, Christine.
Thank you, David. I appreciate you too.
All right, everyone, if you aren't already subscribed to Eternal Life Plan, Christine Harrington, hop over there, make sure you sub to her. And everyone who has shared, came into the stream because you're watching over here, hop over here, St. Dominic's Media. We appreciate you as a sub as well. And thanks for tuning in. We had a lot of views today. But until then, until next time, blessings and shalom to you and to yours. Peace.
Bye-bye.